This is Talk Radio 680 WCBM. It's time now for Money, Riches, and Wealth. Here's your host, Drew Tignanelli.
And this is Drew Tignanelli here with Money, Riches, and Wealth. I'm here with Thomas Bonvasuto. You know, I call Chris CJ. But if, it doesn't sound as good as if I called you TB.
Yeah, that's a tuberculosis, I think, isn't it?
Yeah, so I won't do that. I'll just call you Tommaso Vincenzo Giuseppe Bonvasuto.
All right, that's fine.
There you go. We're just going to call you that. We're on an open show tonight, Tomas.
Yes,
and,
sir.
So our listeners are our guests tonight. So our listeners get to determine what questions they want to ask. And if you want to be the one that gets the most attention, the ones that call in early in the show, they're the ones that get the most attention. Because somewhere around 6:30, they start to wake up and they start saying, I'm going to call them, you know. And next thing you know, you got five or six callers on the line. But
they have to get the phone number speed dialed into their cell phones.
You know, they used to have a simple one, *9680 or something like that, but you can't use that anymore. So now you're right. You got to have it just speed dialed in and just hit it,
410-960-6680.
I got myself all thinking of other things.
Other people's numbers?
You know, and numbers from the past and all that kind of stuff. 410-922-6680 if you want to call and direct the conversation. We talked about taxes with Sean this morning.
Yep.
And I said, you know, sometimes what we talk about in the morning we'll determine what we're going to talk about on an open show that night. But also, I wanted to just do one other thing, Tom. We just hired a new employee.
Yep.
On coming in Monday to help us with tax season. And turns out that she's a listener of our show. So we'll just say hi to Monica and welcome aboard.
Yeah.
We look forward to having
excited.
You.
Yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, open show tonight, 410-922-6680 if you want to call in and talk about the topic of your choice. So let's just refresh what I was talking about with Sean.
Mm-hmm.
People go to a tax preparer, pull up a tax program, and they think they're going to do tax planning.
Right.
You know? That's what they're looking at. They want to get the lowest tax bill possible.
Right.
But the only thing that a tax program does, and the thing that most tax preparers do, not all, but most, I'd say somewhere in the neighborhood of 90% of tax preparers, you come in, you give them their documents, your documents, and their job is to figure out, how do I get these numbers into the right boxes with the right check marks on the computer, in the computer program that will give me the correct response with the lowest amount of taxes.
Mm-hmm.
And they might do a couple little things, you know, extra and say, hey, you know, you could do this or you could do that.
Right.
You know, but really, tax planning is a whole different thing. It's after that tax return is done, to sit back and look at it and say to the client, you know, for 2017, if we did this or if we did that, this would happen differently. You know, give you some great examples. You have somebody who's have high income, a couple hundred thousand or more, and they have children in college. You know, those people who have a couple hundred thousand of income and they have children in college and they're not doing any tax planning and they don't know any of the options available to them, making a huge, huge mistake. And that's that's with a Y, just like the Donald says it. Huge.
Huge. Huge.
Huge. How do you do that? What's the difference between huge and huge?
I don't know.
A huge.
A huge.
Huge.
Yeah. It's,
huge.
Hard, it's hard to replicate.
I don't know.
So,
accent.
Yeah.
I don't have an accent there, Chris, man. So,
but you're right, Drew. And you know, there are still some things people can do between now and April 15th.
Yes,
and
there are
some things there. There are some things that people needed to do by December 31st. So tax planning for those things is done for 16. We can start talking about those for 17. And then there's even things people can do all the way up till October 15th, if they extend their returns, which you talked about this morning as well, is, you know, there's this this negative aura or whatever around negativity about extending returns, and it may be the best thing you ever do.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. I was saying to Sean this morning is, you know, we do about 800 returns, and we're going to do about 600 of them in 2 months.
Right.
We're going to be crammed in 2 months. We're going to try our best to get them all done.
Yep.
and 600 returns will probably be done by April 15th.
Mm-hmm.
But there's 200 returns that we're going to take 6 months to do.
Right.
We're going to sit back, we're going to think about it, drink a little coffee, think about more.
Right.
You know, make sure the client's got all the, did you think about this? Did
right.
you think about that? You don't have
yep.
that much time
mm-hmm.
when you're doing a bunch of returns in a very short period of time. So we do have a caller online, Tom. It's actually our good friend, Michael.
All right.
But we're going to just remind everyone, we're on an open show tonight, 410-922-6680. If you want to call in and ask a question, direct the conversation. And before we take our first pause, we'll see what Michael has to talk about. Michael, how can we help you?
Hi, Joe. I want to ask you a question. Your new employee is going to have this crossing her mind, so maybe you can help the listeners with the answer to this question. Then I want to ask you about something you had on your show a while back about Asia. The question is, what's the rule of thumb for a person to decide whether to claim himself and his wife? Children are grown, but he can't claim them anymore, 26 or older. So what would you advise a person to do about claiming himself and his wife, and she's doing the same for him?
You mean on their withholding for their employer? Or
exactly.
something different?
Or on their tax return?
No, he means the withholding for the employer. So
okay.
I go to work with Johnson & Johnson, mm-hmm. and I'm making $150,000 a year. My wife goes to work for the state of Maryland, and she's making $125,000 a year.
Right.
Should he claim married in two? They have three kids. You know, should he claim married in one, married in zero?
Right.
Should she claim single and whatever? That's what he's asking.
Yeah, is this the W-9? Is that right? I'm not
it's
the tax
the,
guy.
No, it's the W-4.
W-4. Okay.
W-4, right?
Right?
I'm pretty sure. Yeah,
right.
W-4P is for pensions, but W-4 is what you fill out for a federal withholding.
Gotcha.
The answer to the question, Michael, is I always direct people to the IRS withholding calculator. It's about as good a tool as there is. If you have dual income, husband and wife, both working for a different employer or just both working, getting a salary, having withholding, go to the IRS calculator. Just go on Google and type in IRS withholding calculator, and it'll take you through these different questions. Who's making more money? How many children do you have? Do you have other income in other sources? Da 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 da. And at the end, it'll say the husband should claim married in one, the wife should claim single in two, or something like that. And
that's what I'm asking. That's what I wanted to know.
Well, it's out there. It's an IRS withholding calculator. It's a very good program. It works pretty well. I get every time you're dealing with a government website, you can never be confident of it. All right, Michael, I got to run.
I want to ask you a question about a program you had recently where you talked about China.
You got to hold then until after I come back from my pause if you want, okay?
Mm-hmm.
All right, hold on. Take it away, traffic.
Personal finance has become a major area of stress due to the increasing dangers and complexities of the global economy. Personal financial management is a comprehensive approach to combating these issues, and the financial physical is the first step. This is Drew Tignanelli, host of Money, Riches, and Wealth, and president of the Financial Consulate, an independent fee-only firm. The financial physical begins with an objective analysis of your personal finances and ends with a plan to help achieve your goals. Experience the difference of the financial physical and learn how personal financial management can revolutionize your financial well-being. To learn more about the financial physical and the other services we offer, call us at 410-823-SAVE. That's 410-823-7283. Or the easy way to remember that, 410-823-SAVE. Or visit us online at DrewTig.com. That's DrewTig.com.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
I have no idea. I've heard the song before. Chubby Checkers. That's a good guess, though. No, it's not even. Not even. What? Who? I can't hear you.
You can't read lips.
You got a silent...
Yeah. He's trying to read lips there.
The Rascals. That's
Rascals.
Who I thought. I never even heard of them. I've never heard of the Rascals. So you can't help me on that one. Anyway.
You know, some people have heard of Aaron Carter, I think his name is. He's related to the some group, and he's a brother of somebody. My son's playing with a band before them at Fishhead Cantina on
there you
Friday
go.
Night down near the airport.
Is that a plug?
Yeah, it's a plug.
All
it's
right.
a plug. Go to Fishhead
Michael
Cantina.
In Northwest Baltimore, how can we help you? On the Andy Rothman China last week.
I wanted to ask, because the advice was to look for other continents to invest in their countries and companies instead of just Europe. What about Asia, Israel? How is it as an investment to invest in Israel these days?
Well, I think China, I mean, Asia as a whole is an incredible opportunity, because that's where all the creditor nations are in the world. The people that have the money in the world are now the Asian nations. It used to be the Middle East and the United States, and now it's predominantly the Asian countries. You know, China, Japan, South Korea, Malaysia, Indonesia. You know, these countries, Taiwan, they have incredible surpluses of cash. And, you know, so I think there's still a great long-term opportunity. You just got to accept the bumps and bruises that are going to happen along the way. All right, Michael, I got to run. Thank you. Good call. Good questions. Gary in Baltimore City, how can we help you?
Question. I called you a few months ago, and I wanted to take money out of my – I might have like $100,000 in my 401.
Okay.
So – I have some property up in Shenandoah Valley. I'm getting ready to put water, septic, and a well up there.
Okay.
I'm going to take about $15,000 out of my 401. I called you and you said, well, I was debating. Somebody said take part of it last year, part of it this year. You all said it would probably be better just to hold it till this year and see what Trump does. So what I want to know, if I take that money out, I know I got to pay taxes on it then, right?
That's correct.
Unless and after I take that out, can I claim that on my the money I put into the well, the septic, and the electric, can I put that on my taxes next year?
Do you rent the property?
No, I own it.
So you just live there?
No, I don't live there yet. My son lives up there.
But it's just a
water subject. I'm going to retire up there.
Right, but it's just a second home to you at this point in time. So, no, there is no deduction for it. You know,
it's gonna be my home, though. I'm gonna put a cabin up there too. When I get all this done, I'm putting a cabin up there for myself.
I know, but if it's personal investing, it's no deduction for any of those expenses at all. And you know, is there any other way you could come up?
Property? I mean, for improving the property or whatever?
Nothing. No. There's no deduction. There's no deduction for improving a personal property unless you're doing it with energy efficient things like solar panels or geothermal or some type of issue like that. You might get some kind of credit or something. But for the most part, renovating your homes, I wish you got a deduction for it. I'd be paying less taxes for sure.
What I'm doing is I'm not renovating it. I'm getting ready to build it, so I need water, septic, and a well. I have all my permits. I figure it'll take me $15,000 to put it in.
Nothing.
The well, the septic, and water to get ready to put the cabin in.
Nothing. No deduction.
There's nothing I can do.
No deduction. You know, but you're intending to sell your home in Maryland and move up there in the future?
Yes.
Had you considered getting a home equity credit line on your Maryland home and using that to do that with instead of taking it out of your 401k? And then when you sell your home in Maryland, that loan will be paid off and you know, and then you don't have any tax liability. That's what I would be doing before I'd be worrying about, you know, taking money out of my 401k.
See, that's what I was worried about. I didn't want to feel like, I'm getting ready to maybe... Yeah, it ain't going to be long. I'm working on it. Like I said, I'm getting mortar set. That's where I'm going to be. I'm getting ready to put a cabin up. I got another piece of property I'm selling. So, but I just thought maybe I will check on getting equity, maybe see if I can get 15,000 equity out of my home. That way I don't have to pull my 401. I'm drawing money where I work. I'm getting 3% of my money anyway.
That's
plus what I put in.
Yeah, so then that's what you ought to be doing. That was the way I would do it, my friend. All right?
I appreciate your all help. You're a good show.
All right. Take care, Gary. Thank you. Tom in Falston. Whoa. I got him. All right. We're on an open show, and that means that you get to direct. So Michael talked about Asia, and he talked about what was the first? I forgot what he was talking about
the W-4.
Oh, the IRS withholding calculator.
Yep.
It's a great program. Mm-hmm. Just Google search it if you have dual income and you want to get your withholding in line, especially when you move jobs. Because, you know, when you've been in a job, your husband and wife been in the same job for a while, you got that withholding kind of, you know, balance just by accident, you know,
sometimes,
over time.
Yeah.
But if you switch jobs, you need to know, well, what should I be doing or something.
Right.
And that's where that IRS withholding calculator is excellent.
Yeah.
So
there's so many funny things with taxes, Drew. I was having a conversation the other day with somebody, and you know, we're talking about, well, I got to have a mortgage so I can have a tax deduction.
Oh, you're going to drive me crazy saying that kind of stuff.
And people say that stuff, and it's just the people don't understand. They go like, well, oh, at least I didn't have to pay taxes. I got a refund. And I'm like, well, you paid taxes probably. Let me look at your return. You know, the unknowns that people have, the perceptions. I mean, we had a client last year, a really sweet couple, and when we did the returns, you know, a whole bunch of money came back to them, and they thought you were the smartest person in the world, and you're a really smart person, Drew. But you just did the taxes correctly,
and they just overwithheld.
And they overwithheld, you know,
right,
due to a variety of things in their circumstances that led to that. But people don't understand, because you know, the next year they're going to owe, and they're going to think, "Oh, Drew didn't do a very good job on my taxes."
Yeah, well, anybody who takes out a mortgage because they think they're going to get a mortgage deduction,
right,
doesn't understand that you had to pay a bank a dollar to save 20 or 30 cents.
It's ridiculous.
It's totally insane.
Yeah.
But now, you know, if you're going to buy a house,
right,
and you're going to take out a mortgage,
right,
then, you know, the government's going to help you pay that mortgage,
right,
to some degree by subsidizing,
yep,
some of the interest you're going to pay on that mortgage.
Right. Right.
And that's it.
And most advisors are not going to tell their clients to pay off the mortgage if
no,
they have the cash. We have a client that recently got a lot of life insurance money, and, you know, I was telling her, I said, you know, that's a guaranteed return. I can't give you that.
Right.
You know, pay off your mortgage.
Absolutely.
You
it's perfectly logical. You pay off the mortgage, and you lock in that rate of return immediately.
Right. Yep.
There's no doubt about it.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to Kathy in Fells Point. How can we help you, Kathy?
I retired from this company last year, and I received a pension. And I had the option of picking up my life insurance, which I did, and the premium was $30 a month through the company, and I get $150,000 worth of life insurance. Well, at the end of the year, when they figured my life insurance out, they gave me a form, an additional amount that I have to claim taxes on, because it went over like the normal, like a high executive.
Right.
Yep.
Is that true? I mean,
you're working,
imputed,
right?
Imputed income.
No, I'm retired.
You're totally retired.
Yes.
So, but this is some kind of subsidized insurance, life insurance, that they're providing to you as a retiree.
Right, as a group.
Okay.
So I can get it at a discounted amount.
Yeah. So the way it works, Kathy, the way it works is, the amount of premium that the company is paying is only deductible up to the extent of $50,000 worth of life insurance. You said you have $150,000 worth of life insurance, right?
Right.
So the $100,000 of insurance and the premium on that the company is paying is imputed income to you on your tax return. But I can't imagine it's a lot of money.
Well, it was like I think about $900 or $1,000, something.
Yeah,
like
well,
that.
I would. No, it's not a lot of. You know, she's retired, so I'm going to assume she's at least 60, right?
Right.
So, you know, $100,000 of life insurance on a 60-year-old is going to cost at least $900 in a group situation. So, I could very well see that's the imputed interest. I mean, imputed income on that situation.
Even though I'm paying that premium.
You're not paying all the premium, Kathy. You're only paying a portion of the premium. $360 a year is not enough premium on a group policy for somebody over 60-some years of age for $150,000 of insurance. So the company's subsidizing a big portion of it, and that's why you're getting hit with that imputed income. Sorry, but that's the way that that's why they're doing what they're doing.
Okay.
All right.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Bye. I got to go to traffic. Take it away, traffic.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
This is probably the only place once a week that song ever plays.
There you go.
You know? Probably hasn't been played for about 30 years. Yeah, you think you think there's lots of places out there that are still playing that song. Okay, I'll take your word for it, Chris. That wasn't the Rascals, that was the Circle. And I don't think they're called the Circle, though. I think they're just called Circle or something like that. I don't know. Whatever. Anyway, we're on an open show. Nobody likes us anymore. The second half, I guess it's because I made that comment about the second half
right.
of the show
right.
is when everybody calls, so nobody's going to get any time. If you call, they all said, well, forget that.
I'm not calling.
So, and we're on an open show, 410-922-6680, 410-922-6680, if you want to call in and ask a question. And, you know, I'm sorry to give Kathy all that that bad news there,
right,
you know, that
right.
that it is, and, you know, it is the law. And,
yep.
you know, the way you know on your W-2,
mm-hmm.
you know, if you're working for a company and you have group life insurance that they're giving you as
right.
an employer, and many employees have that
yep.
who make more than $100,000 a year. Because a lot of companies give you one times your salary.
Right.
So one times your salary, if you're making $100,000, is more than $50,000.
Right.
And so there are a lot of employees that could be making $400,000
mm-hmm.
a year. So
mm-hmm.
one times their salary is a lot more than $50,000.
Right.
And the amount of insurance premium that that company is paying, and it's the imputed interest. It's not always the exact
amount, yeah.
premium they're paying. There's a formula that the IRS requires them to use to calculate this number. I think I even remember the code. It's like a PS52 or something like that.
That's scary.
Something like that. And anyway, there's a couple things there that they, you know, they do, and it's on your tax. It's on your W-2.
Yep.
Look on your W-2, and look at box 12. And in box 12, you're going to see these codes. Code C is the imputed interest from the insurance policy that's in excess of $50,000. Code D is if you're putting money into the pre-tax 401k. Code DD, double D, that's the medical insurance premium they're paying for you. Or code double A, these are common codes you might see. Code double A would be Roth contributions into a 401k. And if you work for a not-for-profit like a school or a university or something like that, if you're putting money in a 403b, your code's going to be E. These codes are very important, very, very interesting to people like myself
That's
who
right.
like taxes,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Yep.
Anyway, we got callers on the line, Tom. We're going to Phil in Glen Burnie. Phil, how can we help you?
Good evening. How are you? Thank you for taking my call.
No,
sure.
Great to have your call.
Okay, like I was talking to your screener there. I need your assistance with a little bit of everything, but my most pressing question is this. I'm due a little retirement here from one of the major shipping companies, and they want me to take it in a lump sum. I can take it in either, you know, monthly payments or a lump sum. And I'm 61 years of age. The lump sum is a little over $200,000. I was figuring out if I was to live 20 years and taking it in a monthly thing, it works out to about $260,000.
Right.
What is really the best strategy here? Is it to get the lump sum in your hand and do something with it?
The answer to that, Phil, is it depends.
Okay?
Okay. Here's the things that you want to think about. If you're worried about inflation, then the lump sum is a more interesting, you know, settlement or retirement, because I can invest it and try to outpace inflation. An annuity will never outpace inflation. Once you get that annuity monthly check, whatever inflation does, it'll start eating away as the buying power of your annuity. So that's part one. Now, if on the other hand, you're looking for the maximum amount of income for the rest of your life, and you don't have to worry about ever running out of money, then the annuity becomes an attractive, you know, tool.
Mm-hmm.
Because if I take the annuity, I can get principal and interest liquidated to me over my lifetime, whether I live 5 years or 55 years is totally irrelevant. Whereas if I try to take my lump sum money, if I liquidate any of that principal until I'm confident that I'm not going to run out of it, I run the chance that I'm going to end up 15, 20, 30 years down the road with no money left, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So now let's go to another one. On the other hand, if I want to have the flexibility of the lump sum and I want to know that if I die 5 or 10 years down the road, my children or my brothers and sisters will get a lump sum of money, then I want the lump sum. I don't want to take an annuity because if I take the annuity, then I'm going to be leaving all that money with the company's pension plan and not with my family and so forth. On the other hand,
he's got a lot of hands. He's like an octopus.
If I take the annuity, I don't have to worry about making stupid decisions. I don't have to worry about some con artist coming in and trying to get me to invest in something that I lose my money in, or I don't have to get somebody investing my money that don't know what they're doing. And next thing I know, like back in 2001, 2002, 2008, 2009, you know, there were a lot of people who lost 60, 70, 80% of their money because they didn't understand the risks they were taking, and when all of a sudden, you know, they'll hit the fan, you know, the next thing you know, they were trying to get out because they didn't understand why they were losing money this quick. Next thing you know, they locked all those losses in, and so the annuity eliminates that worry to you. So, you know, the way to think about it, Phil, is what I'm trying to say is you have to determine your personality and which of these are the most important to you. And know why you're going with the strategy you're going with.
And Phil, I'd add, you know, you got to look at it comprehensively. You've got to look at any other kinds of annuity streams you might have. You have to look at, as Drew points out, your family situation, whether you're married or have kids and people that are going to rely on.
You're going to get an annuity from that. Social Security,
right.
So that's another stream of income.
So you've got to look at all those pieces together and how it fits in for you.
But keep this in mind too, Phil. And that is that most financial advisors are going to say to you, oh, you take the lump sum, and this is why. And,
right.
But there's an economic bias of every financial advisor, even us, to say to you, take the lump sum.
Yep.
And we say, no, I must educate you on both sides of the coin so you make the best decision for Phil.
Right.
Well, that's what I need. So I need to be calling you and making an appointment.
Well, you can. We'd love to work with you if you want to. You've heard our number, I'm sure, on here. And we'd love to work with you if you want to. But, you know, these are the principles that we're going to go over again with you for you to make that decision. All right?
Okay. Well, I will be calling your office tomorrow to make an appointment ASAP.
All right,
buddy. You take care.
All right.
Happy retirement, buddy.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
All right, I got to take a traffic break. Ron, hopefully you'll hold over, and anybody else wants to call in, 410-922-6680, and we'll be right back. Money, Riches, and Wealth.
Drew Tignanelli, host of Money, Riches, and Wealth, and president of the Financial Consult. We strive to serve as a leader in educating the public on personal finance topics through our Financial Pulse and Consulate Journal. For these publications and learn about our personal financial management services, visit our website at drewtig.com. drewtig.com. And follow us on Twitter at the FinCon for educational updates.
All right, we're back, and we have to run. We got to get these callers in real quick. Ron and Overly, are you still there?
Yes, I am. Hi, Drew.
How you doing, buddy?
Good. Thanks for taking my call. I love your show.
Thank you.
I argue with my other entrepreneurs and brothers about everything you say.
There you go.
I recently co-signed for a loan for one of my daughters and her husband. And my question is what, how long is it, is there a time period when I would be able to sign for my next, offspring to help them, or does that just stay on me forever?
Stays on you as long as there are loans outstanding and you're still co-signed on it.
Yeah.
Now, I will tell you that I have a principle, Ron. I always try to convince clients never to co-sign a loan for a child unless you intend to pay it yourself.
Yeah.
So as long as you're happy with that, I'm totally fine with it. Like, in other words, if they buy a $250,000 house and they need you to co-sign it to get it, as long as you're happy with one day having to pay that $250,000 mortgage and you're not going to break relationship with them when they have problems or whatever, then, you know, hey, I'm all for it, but most people say no to that. So I would try to discourage you from doing any co-signing of any loans, except for some of the most trivial of amounts of money. You know, help a child get started with a credit card, maybe for a period of time. And once they get their credit going, then you get them to get their own card and end of the story. So if you're going to co-sign this loan, the one you have outstanding, I would try to see if there's a time when your daughter could, or your son, whoever, could remortgage the place or refinance, and get your name off of it.
Yeah.
All right?
Okay. Well, that was my question. I'll call you with another one another day.
All right,
thanks,
buddy.
Ron.
Thank you. We're going to Jim in Reisterstown. College tuition. How can we help you?
How you doing, Drew?
Doing great. And you?
Good. I was listening when you started your show off. You were talking about people that make a lot of money and have kids in college, and I was just curious what you were talking about.
Mm-hmm. So do you have kids in college and have high income?
Yeah.
Okay.
When I write it off, it doesn't. When I put it on my taxes, it doesn't seem to do a whole lot.
Well, because your income's probably over $170,000 or so. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. So what you do, Jim, is are you self-employed or are you working as – are you an employee?
I'm self-employed.
Oh, you're the best of all worlds, Jim. So, Jim, you know, what I would do is I would work – you know, we do this with a lot of our clients. We employ the children. And when you say that, a lot of people think, well, I can't do that because, you know, and they're in college and, you know, and so forth. But, you know, there are lots of ways you can employ your children that don't have to be doing, you know – umpteen hundreds of hours worth of work, you know, and you could pay your child almost $30,000 a year, and other than FICA, 15.3% FICA tax on that income, everything else will prove to be 100% tax-free to that child if you know what you're doing and you do it right. You got to do it right.
But is it for this year coming up, is it too late for 16?
It's too late for 16. That's
right.
A done deal. You got to do it for 17 if you have any kids still in college, be it graduate school or undergraduate school. If you're helping to pay for it, you know, you do this technique or two, and bam, $30,000. You know what, $30,000 of taxes to somebody
believe me, I know.
Yeah. You know, and the 47% tax bracket is what you'd be in if you make over $400,000, and they're going to be in the 15.3% bracket. That's a 30% savings on $30,000. That's $9,000 of taxes you pocket.
Per child.
And it's totally, perfectly legal. It's not a loophole. It's nothing. It is perfectly legal.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no way to go backwards.
You can't backwards. Yep. You got to go forward. If you've got a child still in college, this is what you ought to be doing. But this is just one of many tax planning techniques that unfortunately most people miss because they're just dealing with people who are doing tax preparation and not thinking on tax planning, which is what it's all about.
No, I hear you. I've always done my own, and I missed that one. It's a shame, but there's some.
All right.
Sounds like there's no way to go backwards. So.
Not if the kids finish college, then you're done.
Well, if they're still in college, but I'm in 17, there's no way I could do that when I do my taxes for 16.
Might be able to do something for 17.
Yeah, but if you plan it out, you can do it for 17. That'd be the way to go, you know?
Yeah,
forget about the spilt milk. Let's move forward and get the maximum benefit out of it. All right?
I appreciate it. Thank you.
All right, Jim. Sal in New Freedom, how can we help you?
Hi, Drew. I got a question.
Yeah.
My wife is 69 years old, and she hasn't worked for like 8 or 10 years. Can I still get her a 401k for 16?
Did you work?
Yes, I worked.
So you made... Oh, I understand, but how much money did you make in an earned income working?
Oh, working?
Yeah.
About 50. This was like 10 years ago.
No, I mean, how much are you making anything today?
No, I'm not working. I'm retired.
You're retired.
I'm 79.
Right. So, no, if you and your wife are not working at all, okay, no earned income between either of you, then no, there is no retirement plans of any sort that you can be participating in.
Okay. All right.
All right.
Appreciate that.
Sorry about that.
That's okay.
You take care.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's a good question, you know,
yep.
But I don't necessarily know that he meant 401k.
Yeah, like an IRA or something.
I think an IRA, but, you know,
thing.
Let's say, you know, he's 79, but let's say he was out at the golf course doing a starter.
Being a starter, sure.
And he's making $12,000, $14,000, $15,000. He could have done an IRA for himself and his wife.
Yeah.
And he could have done Roth IRAs or he could have done traditional IRAs and gotten all those deductions. I have lots of clients like that. I have lots of clients that, you know, they just puts around doing this or that, you know, making $10,000, $15,000, you know, just keeping themselves busy, and bam, we put that money now. You know, now she was 69, so that would be the last year she could do a traditional IRA.
Right.
So he's 79, he could only do a Roth IRA.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So that's an interesting piece right there.
Right,
but
right.
if he was self-employed and doing some type of self-employed income, that's something that we could, you know, you could work with. We could set up a 401k, a SEP IRA, all kinds of neat things. So, again, it gets back to like Jim, you know, who calls in and he says, you know, I missed that. You know, Jim needs to find a financial advisor who's doing tax planning, thinking out the comprehensive with him. And, you know, he can still do his own tax return.
Yeah.
Nothing wrong with that if he wants to. But as long as somebody's sitting there helping him say, Jim, this is part of the law. This is how this is working.
Right.
You know, your programs aren't going to tell you this. You have to know this. And the laws are so ridiculously complicated nowadays.
Yep.
Sherry in Lutherville, our last caller, how can we help you quickly?
Oh, hi there. I'm 55, and I might be coming into some money from a my dad who died. His business is closing.
Okay.
So if I get $50,000, what do you think I should do with it at my age?
Hmm. Interesting question. What you ought to do is look over your total finances, and first you look at your balance sheet and say, what kind of debt do I have out there? Is there any reason that I should be paying some of this debt off? And after I look at that and I say no, the next thing I would do is I'd say, okay, I've got $50,000 to invest. What are my goals and objectives? What am I trying to accomplish? Are you working?
Yes.
Well, you know, and you participate in a 401k or 403b?
Yes.
Okay.
Do you maximize it?
Yep, that was my next question. Do you maximize it? Do you put in $24,000 a year?
No, I'm not. I'm not that
so rich. So then one of the things I would definitely be looking at is putting that $50,000 into like a high yield savings account, and then I would put maximize my 401k at work and draw a little bit a month off of that $50,000 to subsidize the fact that my paycheck is going down because I'm putting all this money into my 401k. But what that'll do is, bam, all of a sudden your taxes are going to look like Dream City.
Do you have a health savings account?
No.
Okay.
Roth IRAs?
Yeah.
You know, these are all the things you ought to be looking at and thinking about. You know, don't just think about where to invest it. Think first about the big comprehensive planning picture. That's the way to maximize your money, Sherry.
Yep.
Okay.
All right?
Yeah. All right. Sounds great. Thank you.
Take care.
And we talked about that on the video, Drew, this week.
We did.
You know, what happens if you get a lump sum of something? We were talking about a tax refund, but the same kind of thing here is the bottom line is don't spend it. Find other things to do with it. You don't often get that money coming in.
This is Drew Tignanelli saying God bless.